If you shop at Amazon, I have a request. When you shop at Amazon, don't go to Amazon.com. That sounds weird. How are you going to shop at Amazon if you don't go there? Well, don't go directly there. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you go there, there's a giant Amazon logo. Click on it. It takes you right to the Amazon homepage where you were heading anyways, but that small detour tells Amazon, we sent you there. And when they get that message, they send us a commission on everything that you buy. So it's a great way to support us without having to do anything different other than when you shop at Amazon, start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you for downloading the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Don't forget, you can get these shows with the ads and plugs and commercials all edited out on our special VIP audio feed with a VIP membership. That applies to all four shows that I host during the week, the Wade Keller Post Shows and podcasts later in the week, and also all seven PW Torch live casts, plus all of our VIP exclusive shows throughout the month. There's about 100 of them. I host about 12 per week that are VIP exclusive. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, post-pay-per-view roundtables, the Bruce Mitchell audio show, and the Fix with Todd Martin. We got a bunch of other great content. Check out full details at pwtorchvipinfo.com. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com. Yes, all the VIP podcasts, including the ad-free versions of this show, are compatible with popular podcast apps on both iPhone and Android. You can also stream the shows right from our ad-free VIP website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. So check out details if you want to support us and get these shows ad-free and a ton of other VIP-exclusive podcasts. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com for more details. We've got a mobile-friendly sign-up form. You can be VIP in about 2 minutes. Go for it. pwtorchvipinfo.com.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
My first question for you, Zach, is a simple one. Are you on the right side of history?
I'm always on the right side of history, Wade. Absolutely, 100%.
Now, man, I know that there is a truism in professional wrestling that you want to get heat on heels, which helps set up desire among the fan base to pay money and tune in to see the babyfaces get revenge. But the number three babyface on this roster of Raw right now is Elias, or maybe Finn Balor, whoever you have them, number two, number three behind Seth. And after that is Apollo Crews. I mean, there's such a thing as, yeah, as you know, getting heel heat. And then there's another, and plus you add a corrupt heel GM to the mix who's abusing his power. And there's a sense of hopelessness that I think can maybe suppress voter turnout rather than engage the electorate, since we're talking about being on the right side of history and it's voting season. I mean, first of all, they didn't build up Finn Balor much, and I know they didn't forecast the Braun Strowman elbow situation needing surgery, but they did turn Dean Ambrose, they did turn Bobby Lashley, but without Roman Reigns, without Braun Strowman, without Lashley, and without Dean, this is like, it does kind of feel like a downer, like it's kind of like the NWO just destroying WCW until DDP, the much maligned by Bruce Mitchell, DDP, arrived on the scene as a red-hot babyface to create some opposition for the NWO back in the day.
No, you're totally right. You're totally right. Like, you know, you look at the roster right now, and Seth Rollins, without Braun Strowman on the roster, and even with him on the roster, is arguably your number one babyface on the show. And he really has nothing to do with this storyline as the number one babyface. He's got nothing to do with going up against Baron Corbin and his corrupt buddies, Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley. The only babyfaces that are going toe-to-toe with them right now are Finn Balor, who's been defined down for weeks now, and Elias, who just turned babyface and really hasn't fully gotten his feet under him in that new role. And then on top of that, both of those guys have been, you know, beaten on a regular basis up to this point. They don't really serve as credible threats to this evil regime. And so I think as fans, you look at that and you can't really see a true payoff in sight. Yeah, maybe Braun Strowman will come back a little bit early. Maybe he, you know, makes an appearance at TLC, but you know, we have a few weeks until then, and there's just no credibility behind the babyfaces on the show that are being positioned against Baron Corbin. And I think as fans, you can look at that and go, man, what am I watching here? What am I watching for? What is the reason for this? And after tonight, it's a hard question to answer.
We'll get in more into that with our callers, our on-site correspondents, and our mailbag questions as the show progresses here. But let's set the table. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show following the Monday, November 26th edition of Monday Night Raw. We are live streaming the caller portion of this show at WadeKellerPostShow.com. So take note of that for tomorrow after SmackDown. If you want to join us live, you can just listen in or join us for the caller portion at WadeKellerPostShow.com. Jason Solomon from Solid Monster Sounds Off will be back in the co-host chair on tomorrow's program. And then over on our Blue Brand later in the week, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net joins me for the Thursday flagship edition of the program. So a good lineup here, and we begin this week with my co-host Zach Haydorn from PWTorch.com, who is wears many hats at PWTorch, but tonight covered Monday Night Raw with another alternate perspective report, as I also covered it live on PW Torch with a written report. Zach, welcome back to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show.
Oh, Wade, thanks for having me. Always glad to be here. Looking forward to it.
Our number, if you're listening live right now at 11:07 Eastern, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Give us a call if you want to talk about tonight's episode. We're talking about Ronda Rousey and Nia Jax, Dean Ambrose's character and how that's progressing, the state of the tag team division, and if they managed to turn Drake Maverick's peeing his pants incident into something better or worse this week. I'd like your opinion on that. And we can also talk more about the heel power structure on Raw, just dominating these days. So again, 347-215-8558, and push 1 on your Touchstone phone. Did I just say Touchstone phone again? Push 1. It's old habits die hard. Push 1 on your keypad on your smartphone if you want to participate. You have to push 1, otherwise we can't bring you on. I need to spend some time in a hyperbolic chamber after that one. All right, let's go to another topic on the show, though. I think one of the bright spots of the show, let me know if you agree, Zach, is Nia Jax's interview. I thought that was the most confident she's been as a babyface or a heel. She filled a lot of TV time. I thought she had a confident swagger to her, and I think she is riding a wave of heel heat that, I mean, she could have wilted after what she did to Becky Lynch. You know, in real life and felt bad and all. And it's like, you know, if WWE is not going to punish you and take you off TV or suspend you or anything, you might as well just act like you're proud that you did it. And she sure is.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to respectfully disagree on that one. I really got to, not that she wasn't confident. I think she did have that aura of, hey, you know what? I'm going to turn this negative Becky Lynch thing into a positive. She certainly looked the part out there and carried herself well. To me, I couldn't get behind the promo. I couldn't get behind how she was saying what she was saying. She seemed like she was reading to me, and she felt disengaged from the words she was speaking. I felt that she knew, okay, I have to say this and I have to say that, and I'm going to say this, but I didn't feel like there was like an emotional connection there. It felt very much like a scripted promo to me, which is for me personally a turnoff for promo. So I wasn't as high on it as you, but I did like the fact that she carried herself with a certain presence. She was able to hold the segment well live, but just not my cup of tea and how I like to hear promos. I think she needs to grow a little bit if she's going to continue to elevate up the card.
I liked her line when she said, "I'm going to go into Ronda mode." And then mocked what, you know, the recent Ronda Rousey promo about what it takes to be a champion. I thought she showed some range there, and I also thought it felt real and unscripted whether it was or not. I'm not even making a case for that. I'm just saying when she goes, "Yeah, I've been on a roll since Ronda's been reeling." You know, because I like the structure of the promo, which is, since you faced me, you've been on the downturn, and I've been red hot. And part of that includes breaking Becky's face. And as an aside, and she said it with heel glee, which y'all seem mad about. Like, I like how she just kind of looked at that. Y'all seem mad about that. That's and I just thought that he got more heat on her. I liked it more than you did, and I think it is a sign that I think she's embracing this character and moving forward. There always is the issue, you know, when you go out there with your memorized lines and your talking points, that it can sound rehearsed. But I thought this was a step forward for her.
Yeah, and to that note about the premise of the promo of like, since you face me, you've gone downhill. The first thing I thought of when she said that though was, hey, like, since you guys wrestled at Money in the Bank, like, Ronda's become the champion. You know, she's become Raw Women's Champion after that. So it was like, I don't know that I fully bought into that premise just because of that simple fact, you know?
Yeah, although I think that's where some of the heat is. You know, some of the heat is fans sitting at home doing what you're doing, going, no, Ronda's a champion, and you won some award, and then you turned your back on everybody and cheap shot at Becky, and now you're gloating about, you know, derailing. So, like, I think that's kind of where the heel heat is that she's not telling the truth. She's spinning. So I thought she had sort of a gleeful, menacing confidence about her, the quote, role that she is talking herself into believing she's on.
Yeah, I think I can get on board with that rationalization of it. I didn't look at it that way in real time, but yeah. Hearing that explanation, that does work. That works better.
Sure. Let's go to our first call again. If you want to get on the show and talk to us, give your opinion or ask a question, push 1 on your keypad after calling 347-215-8558. We'll go to 814 first. 814. State your name and where you're calling from.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Hey, Ryan, what's on your mind after Raw tonight?
Questions on Lars Sullivan. You think would be a good mouthpiece for him that's already not managing someone, say, like, to bring someone in? Like, would Kevin Sullivan be a good fit, do you think, because he had good work in Ring of Honor, managing BJ Whitmer and the Punisher Martinez a couple years ago?
Kevin Sullivan would be good. I think that's a good fit. I don't know if Kevin's in the mood to get back on the road. I have, comment on that, Zach, and then I have an interesting going full circle idea here for Lars Anderson. I keep doing that, Lars Sullivan.
I think that's a great idea if he's up to it. I think that's one of Lars Sullivan's, you know, weaker parts of his game at this point is his mic work and his promo work. He seems to be one dimensional in that regard, as opposed to in the ring. I think he comes off really well as just a destructive monster. So I think that's a prime candidate for a mouthpiece of some kind. We'll see how he transfers over to the main roster, but yeah, if you'd be up for that, certainly could work. Definitely.
Hey guys, I don't mean to tear you away from more amazing content that Wade Keller is putting out like he does every single week, but I need to tell you about my podcast. It's Sam Roberts, The Last Professional Broadcaster, and every Thursday morning I bring to you Not Sam Wrestling. The biggest names in the world of professional wrestling are on Not Sam Wrestling, whether it's WWE superstars like Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, Seth Rollins, Charlotte, Becky Lynch, NXT superstars like Shayna Baszler in the Undisputed Era, independent stars like Joey Janela, promoters like Court Bauer. The voices that you want to hear from this world of wrestling are on Not Sam Wrestling. Plus, every week, we break down everything that's going on in this world with the State of Wrestling segment, which Wade Keller has joined me on more than a few times. Hey, you can get the podcast every single Thursday morning. YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, notsam.com, and you can go the extra mile. There's bonus shows, there's videos, and it's all available at patreon.com/notsamwrestling. However you want to get it, get it. It's Not Sam Wrestling. And now, back to our buddy Wade.
So here's my idea. I'm a Lars Sullivan fan. I like that he's so different than what's out there. I'm not sure you want to build, you know, a company around him as your lead heel in this era, but I think he can be a really good borderline top tier, more than a role player. And I like that he does seem like a throwback. I believe that what I see in him is what he is, and there's an edge, there's a gruffness. I grew up a huge Mad Dog Vachon fan. There's a little bit of that in him, some Mongolian stomper. I can give a list of a lot of people he reminds me of from back in this, and going back all the way to the 70s and old footage to the 80s and early 90s. Here's my idea, though. He can solve a problem. This is an old trope of pro wrestling, a go-to angle in pro wrestling. And that is when a babyface is in peril and he's getting outnumbered and beaten down, you bring in an unlikely friend. What about Finn Balor bringing in Lars Sullivan to his side to help him battle and fight fire with fire and evil with evil by offsetting what Corbin and Drew and Lashley are doing, and having Lars show up as an unlikely babyface, and then you can always turn him later. But have fans go, whoa, this guy we've been seeing vignettes of. And one little hint that made me think that there might be merit to this thought is Renee Young said, I hope Lars comes to Raw. Now, to me, Renee should be scared of this guy. And he's throwing cinder blocks on the ground, and they're breaking. Oh, my God. So she should be like, I hope he doesn't end up here. I'm kind of creeped out. And Corey's like, oh, don't worry, you know, or I'm kind of nervous, too. You know, that should have been the take. So anyway, what do you think of that, Zach?
No, I think that's a really a good way to book his debut on Raw. I think that for one thing, it'd be kind of a curveball. You know, I think everybody's expecting
until
Lars
I ruined it
as right until you called it.
Sorry,
God, thanks a lot, Wade. No, but it's but it makes sense. I mean, it would make sense storyline wise. The baby faces clearly they need some sort of help to get their comeuppance. So yeah, I think Lars could definitely be that guy. I had a similar line of thinking as you in terms of that storyline, but Bray Wyatt was the guy that I thought could fill the Lars role well with a him making his return at Starrcade over the weekend. He was a guy that I thought, hey, you know, maybe at the end of the show he makes an appearance, makes the save, or maybe they'll save that for next week or something. But along those lines, I think either one could play that role well, and I think the babyface is needed at this point. There needs to be some credibility there that's going to reward fans for watching this.
I think Bray would – I think there would be a little bit of a collective yawn if it was Bray. I don't dislike that idea because I think it's a good circumstance for Bray to come to Balor's aid and put him in a situation where he can instantly be relevant and have that backstory of kind of being needed. You know, I mean, like, we need someone on our side. But it's sort of like, oh, okay, we're going to – I could also see fans looking at that going, ah, you're trying to get us to care about Bray again, and we're not quite there yet. Yeah. So it could go either way. The Lars thing would be a curveball, and it'd be you could do both. I mean, there is sort of 3-on-1 at this point, or I guess 3-on-2 with Elias, but
throw a court. Well, and Lars would certainly have like a more fresher feel to him, I think, too. I mean, there's got to assume there's people watching Monday Night Raw that don't know who Lars Sullivan is at this point, and seeing a new face on the show, it will just add a layer of freshness that that maybe Raw could use these days. So I like it,
and I like kind of the Beauty and the Beast type thing. You know, you got Balor who looks a certain way, but I can imagine Balor's character. You know, Balor fans looking at Balor going, I could see him hanging out with Lars Sullivan. Like, you know, he's for everybody, including like beasts like Lars. So. I don't know. That could be. I think the dynamic could be interesting. It's not a bookend tag team. You're playing off of, you know, Balor going, I need a monster. I need a beast to help me battle here. You know, they'd have to pick a new name than Beast and Monster because that's copyright Braun and Brock. But there's many words out there Vince can look up.
Yeah, and like, you know, the other thing it does too is it provides an answer for the problem at hand. But it also can set Finn Balor up for a feud down the road and further into the winter, and then you can have Lars Sullivan turn on Finn, build him up as a heel, and he could be a contender for a babyface Universal Champion come out of WrestleMania or something like that. So you could put Lars Sullivan on this road to being extremely relevant, partnered up with the right babyface. So I think it's a good way to introduce him, definitely.
Yeah, and you turn him down the line, and when the time is right, and then you've got good heel heat. All right, let's go to our next call. By the way, 347-215-8558. If you want to get in line on the phone banks, push 1 on your keypad or just your touchtone phone if you're using one of those. All right. 516, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello.
Hello, 516.
Hey, what's going on? Hey, man. When I first called in, you guys were in the middle of a conversation about scripted promos. I just wanted to say I thought it was ridiculous that Braun Strowman from the hospital bed was like saying like, I have no apprehensions or whatnot. Like, I don't think that's what a dude like that would sound like. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think, you know, they want to save money on pyro and whatnot. Like, just fire all the writers. I hate for anyone to like lose their jobs, but just let these guys talk in their own voices. Also, I want to add, your idea for Lars.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
We got to get, it's driving me nuts. I need your name and your city. Otherwise, I just get anxious.
Oh, Jay from New York.
All right, cool. Thanks. And by the way, yeah, on this weekend's Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast, our blue logo, we ran my Steve Austin interview where we talked about the scripting of promos and you know, the moment he had with Austin 316 and went into that in depth. But, I mean, you know, Steve's a guy who's No, that's, I was just going to say, Steve's someone who's very, very much believes in let wrestlers, you know, figure that out and work from bullet points and not scripting. And I understand there's an argument to be made that some people need script, you know, some people need words written, more written out for them, and they function well in that environment. But it shouldn't be a hard, fast rule that almost everybody's working from word for word scripts. And if you're going to write for somebody, yeah, you want to write for Braun, as you're saying, Jay. You want to write for Braun in a way where it sounds like his voice, and that's where sometimes the writers fail because they're trying to be too clever.
Yeah, it's just I've heard Braun on like podcasts, just like speaking off the cuff, and that dude is like charismatic. And I think if he was using his own, like, instead of saying like I have no apprehensions, he could say something like I don't give a damn. Like if you want to PG it up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, my question was. And also, in that moment, I was fully expecting Ziggler to come in with the bedpan.
Oh, God.
something like
yes.
that. Anyway, so speaking of Ziggler and something more positive, I thought the match with Rollins was awesome and that it was super sweet that they finished it with the superplex into the Falcon Arrow.
Yeah.
My question is, do you think Ziggler's career trajectory would have been completely different had he been Nick Nemeth this entire time? Because I think that name Dolph Ziggler is ridiculous. Like, yeah. It's the combination of Dolph Lundgren and, like, Dirk Diggler.
Yeah.
Like, I think, like, if he had been Nick Nemeth, I think he would be, like, top tier, like, all time. Like, that's a star's name. And do you ever see him, like, having, like, one final, like, nightcap on his career, like, on the Indies or in New Japan, like, as Nick Nemeth? And, like, even going forward in comedy as Nick Nemeth, like... Where do you see him ending up in, like, the lore of WWE?
Yeah, no, he's... I agree with the commentary, storyline-wise, that Drew was a guy who rebuilt Ziggler's confidence. I think it was Renee who said that in the middle part of the match. And I agree with that. I mean, Ziggler's had a comeback, and I've heard he's, you know, super proud and happy to get the monkey off his back of just seeming like everything he was touching was turning to coal. And not Michael Cole, but yeah. And it was kind of depressing. It just nothing was working. And I mean, he was yelling and you know, acid wash jeans and hair color changes and complaining about the fan. It was just like one failed thing after another. But he was always super talented, you know. And he just it was a matter of somebody just going, stop doing this, start doing this, and let's put you in a position that matters and not have you job all the time. He's still jobbing quite a bit. But in a way that I think does feel more relevant, I do think the name holds him back. I mean, there's just
no way. I feel like he was doomed from the start with that.
No way.
Like that's like there's so many things you can be like. He was the natural Nick Nemeth. You can be like Nick the Behemoth Nemeth or the Nefarious Nick Nemeth.
Yes.
like anything.
I'm not big on puns, but alliterations are fine. So we can give you points for that.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, Zach, what do you think of Ziggler and the name?
No, totally. I mean, the name definitely holds him back. Overall, I'm not sure, you know, that his career would have had a totally different trajectory with a different name, but it certainly would have helped. And, you know, I'm happy to say that I'm surprised by the resurgence that Dolph Ziggler's had. If you would have asked me, you know, 18 months ago, or could Ziggler be in this position, I would have said no way. And I think I did say that on this show, but he's really seemed like he's figured something out since he got paired up with Drew McIntyre. He seems more consistent in his performances. He just seems a little more polished top to bottom and kind of gets what he's supposed to be doing out there in a more collective way. So as far as where he will lie in pro wrestling lore and WWE lore, I think he's a WWE guy for life. You know, he's was brought up in that system. That's what he knows. That's where he's going to get paid the most money, assuming everything he stays healthy and whatnot. So I kind of see him in WWE as this forever WWE guy. But, I think he'll always kind of top out at the upper mid card, lower main event scene. And you can polish him up for a main event title program at any moment, but he's never going to be that guy that carries the brand, even with this resurgence, as good as it has been.
Jay,
yeah, I agree 100%.
Jay, anything else?
Yeah. I guess like bringing that whole thing full circle. He's always going to be like the mid-card dude. As far as like people speaking for themselves and whatnot, even McIntyre is a guy. I think Drew Galloway is a way better name too. But I guess they already have a Gallows, right? I don't know. I just think all these guys would be better served with using their own names and their own identities, and just get rid of all the writers and just have a proper booker in the 21st century. You know what I mean? But anyway, thanks for your time, guys. Keep doing what you're doing. Thanks for taking my call.
Excellent. Thank you, Jay. Appreciate it. All right.
Take care.
Yep, you bet. All right, cool. Good energy there. Zach, let's go ahead and cut away. We actually, I think, are going to have two on-site correspondents. So we'll get a couple different perspectives on what it was like in the building tonight in what just looks like a gorgeous new basketball arena for the Milwaukee Bucks there. I love the Target Center renovation here in Minneapolis. I'm amazed at what they're able to do with the building, 28 years old like that. Milwaukee got a sweet new facility. I think this is the first time, I'm quite sure it's the first time WWE's been there. So we'll talk to a couple people who are on site there. So everybody send in emails if you want to comment or question on our conversation so far or any topics that we have not gotten to yet here on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. I'm Wade Keller, the other voice is Zach Haydorn, and we'll be back right after this.
Hey, if you're a fan of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which you obviously are if you're listening to this right now, check out Solomonster Sounds Off. It's a weekly show covering all the latest news in the world of wrestling, from WWE to Lucha Underground, New Japan, and everything in between, plus listener Q&A, rankings, and more. Check it out in iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or download directly from thesolomonster.com.
All right, we are back with our on-site correspondent, Jeff, who attended Raw tonight in Milwaukee. Jeff, I am curious what you thought. Had you been in the new facility yet in Milwaukee, and what do you think of it? I've seen pictures, and it just looks gorgeous.
This was my first time. It's only been open a couple months, and it's really fantastic. All the lower bowl seating, you're like right on top of the court, or in this case, the ring. It was pretty amazing. I was really impressed.
Yeah, so where'd you end up sitting in the facility?
We sat one row off of the floor level so my daughter could see pretty much over the ringside. So we were really close. We were right, pretty much even with the ramp and on the corner of the ring. Good seats.
And you brought your six-year-old daughter. Is this her first event?
No, we've been here three times.
Oh, wow, okay.
She's a big fan.
Cool. Who are her favorites?
She loves Ronda Rousey and Sasha Banks and Alexa Bliss. Those are her favorites for sure.
Not Bayley?
Not really. I mean, she used to like Bayley, but I don't know. I think some of the storylines even rub off on the kids, too.
Makes sense. Makes sense. Cool. Well, Zach, why don't you lead off with a question about the actual content of Raw?
Yeah, well, I'll lead off with a segment involving two of those three women. How did the open forum segment go over with Bayley and Sasha Banks kind of being interviewed, quote unquote, by the audience? Did it get a good reaction? Was the crowd into it? How'd it go?
I would say it went pretty well for one of those segments. Usually it's kind of a disaster when they script those things out. You could kind of tell that the fan was a plant there. She was moving back and forth during the event from the back to the seats. But for the most part, it got a pretty good reaction, especially when Bayley said Alexa Bliss could go back to hell. That got a pretty good reaction, but I would say it went pretty well for the most part.
I got a kick in the backstage segment out of Bliss when Sasha or Bayley, I can't remember, said, "This isn't going to be a this is your life, is it?" And Bliss was like, "Oh, I wouldn't do that to you." It was just a little little wink to the audience that, yeah, we know that one thing was a disaster. It did sound like there was one attempt to get a negative chant going, you know, like this is awful or something like that, and it didn't pick up any steam about midway or maybe early on during it.
Yeah, I kind of caught a little bit of it. I couldn't make out what it was saying.
Yeah.
The strange thing about this new arena is the noise doesn't travel like the Bradley Center. You could get like pockets of chants going, and they were loud, but it took a while for everybody to like pick up the chant if it came from the other side of the building.
Yeah, yeah. So let's kind of in a broad sense, who's the most over on the whole show? Who got the most crowd reaction, good or heel or face, man or woman?
Finn Balor and Seth Rollins, for sure. When Elias came out with the surprise, I would say he got the next biggest pop, just because of the surprise and the song. For the heels, it's definitely Corbin. He got a lot of negative reactions tonight. And Lashley, for that matter, too, which I was a little surprised about. McIntyre doesn't really get a negative reaction because he's an ass kicker. So, I mean, people are kind of in awe of him as opposed to just outright booing him.
Interesting. That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, when you're an ass kicker, it's in this era, and when you have traveled the journey that Drew has, fans have kind of respect for him. I think he's going to be a big time babyface when that moment comes. Was there anything that jumps out to you in particular that just did not work with the crowd that put him to sleep or they were restless during?
The No Way Jose match didn't really get a lot.
I think you should call it the Jinder Mahal match if we're going to rip on it.
Okay, I mean, whatever way you want to go, either of those guys, it just really wasn't working.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the Lucha Mask, I would say that was a good finish, but the crowd really wasn't into it at the start of it. You know, when you have a hot open and then Elias gets beat down, the wind was kind of out of everybody's sails at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would say like the middle of the show, obviously, you know, when they're trying to fill time, that's usually when you get the dead spots.
What kind of heel heat did Nia Jax have? She was ripping on Ronda Rousey before Rousey came out. Did the fans seem to be still reacting viciously negatively to her because of what she did to Becky?
Yeah, she was getting a lot of boos, especially when she brought up Becky's name. She got up a lot of boos, but, you know, those segments, they always drag on a little bit too long for me, where she should have came out and been kind of to the point, egging on the crowd. And then once Rousey came out, you know, there was a big reaction for that. But then there wasn't really the payoff until the dark match at the end.
How did the crowd react to the video of Drake Maverick ruining, we'll say, Bobby Roode's jacket or robe? Excuse me.
Surprised that they were doing that. Yeah. And the reaction of the wrestlers when they stop mid-match and just watch it, it's kind of, I mean, it was kind of long, you know what I mean? Everybody saw him run off, and then you're kind of seeing, okay, then we're going to get the match. And they cut back to that within, it felt like 5 to 7 minutes. And, you know, it's just strange to see that. But especially with, you know, when I have a kid here, it's a little strange.
I was wondering.
To see that.
Yeah. Was she like laughing, or did you like tell her to, you know, hey, look at that on the floor. What does that look like? Is that a bug?
I didn't really mention it. I kept her attention towards the competitors in the ring.
Got it. Yes. Was the crowd laughing? I mean, did it seem like they were into it, or were they groaning and wincing like this is dumb?
You're getting the groans, like the gross laughter groans, but you weren't exactly getting like turn away kind of groans.
Yeah. Go ahead, Zach.
I was just curious as to, you know, tonight was very much a heel-heavy show. I mean, with the Nia Jax stuff, the stuff at the end with Baron Corbin, the stuff at the beginning with Baron Corbin. I know you guys got the Seth Rollins-Dolph Ziggler match with Seth Rollins winning, but outside of that, like I said, it was a lot of episode about getting heat on those heels. Was the crowd restless to that at all, or how did they respond as, you know, props in that goal?
I would say the crowd was with the heel heat, especially for the beatdowns for both guys. I would say the crowd was pretty into it, not very happy about both guys getting beat down. So I would say overall, the strategy worked pretty well.
Okay.
Talk about the dark match. I'm assuming that they gave the fans a good vibe to go home to after, you know, the heels pretty much dominated other than Seth's win. The heels were pretty dominant throughout the night. What was the dark match?
5-on-5 women's match, Nia Jax, Tamina, and the Riot Squad versus Ronda Rousey, Natalya, Ember Moon, and Bayley and Sasha. And Rousey got the win with the hot tag at the end.
Any gauge on who was most over among those 10?
Oh, definitely Rousey's way over.
Yeah.
And Nia Jax has the heel heat. The Riot Squad, they do a good job in the ring, but they don't have like a ton of heat for them. Yeah, it was more like a house show match, which is really, you know, great for my kid to see it. I would, you know, much rather sometimes they're coming back in March to take her to the house show as opposed to Raw, because Raw is pretty long, and the house show is matches as opposed to match and commercial. It gets kind of long when you're sitting in the audience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
You are props more than the show is for you. Did the crowd, speaking of that, kind of hang with Dean Ambrose during that segment, or did it seem like they were getting restless? And did it seem just, you talk about that, and then also just the ratio of video recaps, did it seem too heavy in that regard and not enough in-ring action? Or did it seem like an okay balance considering it is a TV show?
I thought it was an okay balance for the most part. The Dean Ambrose scene was kind of weird. You know, I guess they were trying to make up for the fact that he wasn't there, and then kind of teasing the fact that he might be there, you know, to interrupt during Seth's match. That didn't happen, obviously. I would say they were with it for the most part. It was just kind of strange for me, but, you know, people were entertained by it.
Was there anything before Raw that you got there in time to see?
Yeah, there was a main event match with Zack Ryder and the B team versus the Ascension and Tyler Breeze.
Let me guess. Ryder and B-Team won?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they got a clean win there.
Wow.
There you go.
Who scored? Do you know who pinned who? Do you remember?
I remember Breeze taking the fall. I believe Axel got the win.
Poor Breeze. all right, cool. Anything else you want to add from your on-site experience?
Yeah, I would just say I thought it was pretty well done. The storylines made sense tonight. It kind of paid off at the end with the dark match, like I said. And, you know, I kind of liked not going home happy for everybody on the TV show. That's fine with me every once in a while.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, Jeff, thanks so much for taking time to talk to us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Zach. Wade, I appreciate it. And have a great rest of the
now,
show.
Before you go, are you a Packer fan?
Yes, I am.
Okay. you guys have had a lot of, you know, like success. I mean, I know Aaron Rodgers, what, only been to one Super Bowl? Is that correct?
Wait, it's okay. You can unload on me. You don't have to spare my feelings.
You're slowly twisting the knife, Wade.
But it did.
No, go for it. Last, go for it. It's fine.
Last night's game felt good. I don't know if the 3% chance of the Packers making the playoffs after losing last night should give you some hope, but I mean, there's still hope. There's still hope, Jeff.
Well, I'm going to be a little contrarian here and tell you that I don't really want them to make the playoffs, and I'd rather have them kind of reboot and move on from McCarthy and see what we can do in another regime in there.
I think Aaron Rodgers played in the spirit of what you just said.
Well, it's been like that for a few weeks.
Yeah.
You know, just be careful what you wish for, though, because I'm a Bears fan, and I had to live through a couple years of Mark Trestman after that. Those kinds of thoughts. So just, you know, be careful. That's all.
Well, congratulations on this season. Enjoy it.
Oh, thank you.
I am fully prepared to have another bad coach. We did have Mike Sherman. He was carried by a great quarterback, Brett Favre, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, quarterbacks make more impact on the field, in my opinion, than head coaches, but apparently, Mike McCarthy's reign is kind of run to the end of its course.
He looked a little disheveled as things were falling apart last night. So,
yes.
All right. Well, it felt better. I've been not talking to Zach about the Bears-Viking game until I had a win that could make me feel better about losing to the Bears. The Bears look pretty.
Oh, you'll pretty get impressive. Another shot in a couple weeks.
I know.
Come on.
I agree. All right. Thanks, Jeff. It's been fun.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yep. Take care. All right, we are now joined by Mitch, who attended Raw tonight in Milwaukee. What'd you think of the new arena in Milwaukee? Had you been there before?
Yeah, I've been to a Bucks game earlier this year, but first wrestling show there.
Yeah, nice. Did it?
It's great.
Is it great for wrestling?
Yeah, it is. It is, yeah. Because the lower bowl is about 75% of it. The upper deck is very small, so it feels like a smaller arena.
Ah, cool. So what do you think overall of Raw tonight? Zach was telling me as we were ringing you up that if you look at hashtag Raw tonight, you know, the world is coming to an end after tonight's episode. What did you think being in the building? What was it like as a live experience?
It was rough. When they tell you basically at the, in the first half hour that you weren't going to see Braun or Ambrose, I think that took a little bit out of the crowd. I think most people knew that Braun wouldn't be there, but you know, with what's been going on between Seth and Dean lately, I think that's what people were hoping would kind of carry the show.
When Dolph's music played, I didn't get the sense that the fans in the building were like, yeah, this is the surprise open challenge that we were looking for. That said, it was, I thought, a good match. It got, once it kind of, I mean, it's never bad with Seth and Dolph, but I thought it the pace really picked up, and it had a good, really good final third after being just kind of good up to that point. Is that the sense in the building? Like, oh, it's Dolph. Well, this should be good. But sort of a shoulder shrug, and then they kind of won the crowd over as the match went on.
Yeah, that's spot on. That's exactly what it was. They didn't. I think people had hopes of obviously there's some kind of surprise return or a bigger name than maybe a Dolph or something. But it, once it came out, you knew they were going to put on a show, and they gave them a good amount of time to do it. So the show needed a good match, so it helped.
This was a very Baron Corbin heavy program. Did that work? Like, do you, seeing him in the building, does he kind of own the ring when he's in it and hold fans' attention? Or I don't mean to pick on Jinder Mahal too much, but is it sort of like Jinder, where it's like, well, he's the designated tall guy getting a lot of mic time, but I'm kind of bored. Where does he fall in that range when you're in the building and he's having as much time as he had doing what he was doing?
It's not quiet for him. He gets a reaction. There are a ton. Every time it was silent for a little bit, Corbin sucks chant would come out, and he definitely works the crowd, especially when the matches are what I would guess would be commercial break. He's nonstop talking trash to the people out there, and I like Corbin. I've always liked him, especially since he went heel and he's got this GM role. He's shown a side of his personality that I wasn't really sure was there, but I think he's doing it. I like him. So as far as I'm concerned, he's doing a good job. And I think just the fact that the fans aren't bored when he's out there, they might be chanting that he sucks, but they're definitely at least invested into disliking his character.
Mitch, if I go on the Steve Austin show and talk about Baron Corbin again, and Steve gives me a hard time for being Baron's number one fan, can I quote you? Can I quote you as a testifying that, hey,
absolutely, I've been there with you. Yeah.
good.
Yeah,
all right.
I've been there with you. I've heard you say that. So.
I'm looking for help here. I do think Corbin's good in his role. I mean, I do. I get pushback on that, and there's people who think he's just awful. And you know, Bruce Mitchell is one of them who just thinks he's a bad actor and all that. I don't think Corbin's good backstage. I think when it's just when he's not having the crowd and he's not immersed in his character and you ask him to act, it feels like acting and not good acting. When he's in the ring and he's reacting to the crowd and there's a lot going on, I think he rises to the occasion, and I think he's obnoxious, and he gets, to me, the kind of reaction you want a heel authority figure to get, which is not fans being bored, but like you're saying, Mitch, they're into booing him and chanting he sucks and wanting to see him get his comeuppance, and that's the job of a heel.
Yeah, exactly. I thought that opening promo with opening promo with him and Bobby Lashley and Drew, I thought he played off of them well, and I thought they were all fairly solid. I thought the part about him talking about the carbs at Thanksgiving, kind of, it was like you said, there's a smugness to it that you want, and I worked for me.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so Ronda Rousey, did she get the biggest pop of the night, the most fan support, or was there someone else in the running? Was Seth above her? How would you rank everybody? Maybe Finn Balor's in there?
Yeah, I'd put it Seth, Finn. I mean, if you're looking in terms of, like, positive reaction, like, obviously Ronda might have got, like, the loudest ovation when her music hit, but if you were talking just generally most popular, I'd say Seth, Finn, and then Ronda and Elias were right there too.
That's good. Go ahead, Zach. Go ahead with your questions.
Yeah. In regards to reactions, Wade and I debated this at the top of the show, but what was the crowd's feeling towards Nia Jax and her promo against Ronda Rousey?
It didn't come off well live, I didn't think. I didn't think she did a bad job. It seemed like her speaking was fine. She came off as a heel, but I in the arena kind of just fell flat, I think.
Was there a rough spot in the show? Was there a point where the crowd was disengaged?
Probably about the time when No Way Jose made his way out after the Jinder, and yeah. It was Jinder and No Way Jose, and there was when he came out, the people actually stood up. They were looking for something at that point. There were a few lulls in this show. I thought you're missing some of your bigger guys, though. That's to be expected.
I wrote in my report on PWTorch.com covering Raw, few matches under 5 minutes feel so long. It was a little clocked in under 5 minutes, but it just dragged. And yeah, it wasn't, I can't imagine it was dynamic in the building, because it certainly wasn't on television. How did the Drake Maverick Authors of Pain thing happen? Like, to me, I would have told a story of Bobby Roode and Chad Gable being a little less obnoxious and over the top and more endearing, you know, have enthusiasm, the protege mentor type dynamic, and build them up, and then make the tag team title seem important, and then AOP come in and seem unbeatable, and you just tell the story of you know, Gable being kind of nervous and rude, mentoring him and saying this is going to be tough, but we can do it, and tell a sports like story, and then just go out there and have Drake be this credible mastermind who's got these two monsters who look like they're going to rule the tag division forever, and the first hope that the fans have is Gable and Rude unseating them, but you're scared for them. It just seems like it's just an easy story to write in a pro wrestling setting, and instead it's about Drake peeing his pants and Bobby Roode being one of the dumbest baby faces in history with the tag titles on the line, just turning his back to his opponents and staring at a guy peeing because he's worried about a robe, which, as Renee, who did not help matters here, said, well, if Bobby would win the tag titles, he could buy 10 of those robes. And while that's totally true, you shouldn't say that, Renee, because it's just underlining how stupid Bobby was. So I got my rant in, Mitch. I want to get your take.
you hit all the points I would have hit there. Nobody cared. It was, I don't know how long that match was. It felt very long. That's another one of those, maybe that it might have been around 10 minutes but it sure it felt longer than that, that's for sure. And I thought the way Roode and Gable have been lately, you probably should have just given that to AOP a little without that story, like you were saying. I probably would have just put AOP over a little stronger and not needed the distraction finish.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was totally I totally ate my words in my report tonight on that, because right before Gable and Roode made their entrance, they cut like a pretty serious promo. Yep. Like, hey, this is the moment that we're waiting for. We're waiting for the, you know, our tag team title shot. This is why we became a team. Boom. No joking. No, you know, funny interjections by Gable. And then, you know, he gets distracted by somebody peeing with the ultimate goal on the line. Like, man, it had to eat my words in a matter of 12 minutes. But hey, it happens.
What else stood out from the Raw part of the show, Mitch? Anything else?
It was not a very newsworthy show. Braun got a good reaction, even though he wasn't there. The fans were into him. He got some get these hands chants, even after he said that he wasn't going to be there that night. So, I think that's about everything noteworthy that happened.
Yeah, talk about the women's match, and if the crowd was just kind of beaten down by the beatdowns of the babyfaces, or if they got up again for the big tag match at the end.
Yeah, I don't think the crowd really got up for it at all, to tell you the truth. I think it was a lot of people left after Corbin and Finn, be honest. So I'd say about 20% left after that. And then, they came out, and there was not much interest to it.
Interesting. All right. How about main event tapings before Raw? Did you get there in time for those?
Yeah. Titus beat Mojo. It was a quick match and wasn't much to it. And then Tyler Breeze and the Ascension They lost to Zach Ryder and the B team. It was Bo Dallas pinned Tyler Breeze in that one.
And where did you sit, and what did you pay for your ticket, if you don't mind saying?
No, it was I was about 20 rows up in the first level, the lower bowl, about 20 rows up. It was only like it was $30.
Oh wow!
Tickets weren't, tickets were very reasonably priced. It wasn't there weren't many people there, so I'm guessing that's why.
And did you notice an abundance of any particular T-shirts? Was there a trend in that regard?
A lot of Seth, a lot of Rollins, a lot of Balor Club, Rousey. The usuals in that regard.
Okay. Sounds good. Anything else you want to share from your on-site experience?
No, that's it. It was it was a pretty run-of-the-mill show. It happened, and hopefully it was one of the ones that I was kind of glad I was there, because that would have been a rougher 3 hours on TV, I feel.
Well, I actually meant to ask this.
Yeah.
How full was the venue?
It holds about 17.5 for basketball. Like I said, it's got a smaller feel because it is a smaller arena. It's smaller than our old Bradley Center. I would say there are probably no more than 7,500 people there. So they had, which isn't horrible, but they had the three quarters of the top, closed off. Like I said, the top's not very big, but three quarters were closed off. And then, hard camera side, there was a smattering of people over there, and then the rest of the area on the lower bowl was fairly full, so it wasn't a bad crowd, but it certainly wasn't packed.
All right, are you a Packer fan?
Yeah, Wade.
Okay,
we were having a down here. I know they put the Vikings on the Jumbotron for some reason in one of their clips in between commercial breaks, and maybe the loudest reaction of the night was the booze.
Oh, really?
What bowl champ you guys got going there?
Why did they do that? What was the context?
I don't even know. It was like a highlight package, and they cut. I don't know if it. I think they were showing like celebrities, like Ric Flair at a Falcon game or something, and then for some reason the highlight ended with like a clip of the Vikings for like 3 seconds, and that brought the place up. Maybe that's why the place was pretty dull at that point.
That's pretty funny. All right, well, better
too soon.
We don't get to say this mid-season too often to you guys, but good luck next year.
Thank you. We'll see after the draft, hopefully.
Yes, all right. I appreciate it, Mitch. Thanks for being a good sport.
All right, thank you.
Yep, take care. All right, we are back, and we have quite a bit of email. So let's hit on some of these. I don't know where to begin here. Well, we'll start here on Ron and Nia. Zach in Texas says the women's segment was a mess. First of all, Nia Jax should never be allowed within 50 feet of a microphone again. Okay, Zach, you got someone on your side.
Someone in my corner.
Yes. Promos have never been her strong suit, but damn, that was rough. Her delivery was not good, and the content was nauseating. Using the fact that she is... This is why you got to stand by your gun, Zach. Just be like, I don't care what you're saying, Wade. I know I'm right. And then see if people are on your side. Using the fact that she is an unsafe worker with a proclivity for hurting people to get heat is disgusting. She's already got heat from the fans implicitly. They don't have to have her mention Becky 5 times in a promo. I was relieved to see Rhonda come out, but her promo was all over the place to me. Seriously, they have her selling Nia's punch too. Enough already. On top of that, she's still feuding with Becky, particularly on Twitter. And she mentioned Charlotte in her promo. I don't get it. I never thought I'd say this, but the Riot Squad ambush was the best part of the whole segment. Was I too harsh or not harsh enough? I thought this was a better week for Rhonda just because she said less. But when she's like, you're lucky you're from a warrior culture where one punch from you can be heard around the world. I'm like, okay, someone cut her mic. I don't know what she's about to say. And then she's like, I'm going to rip your arm off and slap Charlotte with it. And I'm like, wow. And then she got like scary and tense. And I'm like, I mean, it's an adventure with Rhonda. And I think it always will be.
Yeah, me too. And I thought Rhonda was not as bad as Nia in this segment. I thought she was, typical Rhonda at this point. I think she's a little disjointed, but that's what makes her more natural and more authentic. So that her portion of the promo didn't bother me as much. I'm with the emailer, obviously, as far as Nia Jax goes. except for one part. I don't mind them using Jack's, you know, quote unquote injury, not quote unquote, but injuring Becky as a means to get Nia heat. I think at this point, because Nia Jax is getting that reaction from the audience anyway, I mean, they're giving it to her. They were before it was a storyline. And I think it would have been hard for WWE just to completely ignore that reaction. So I'm fine with that. Yeah, it's not the best way to get over and by just, you know, hurting fellow coworkers in the ring. But when that happens and the audience responds like they did and like they are, you know, you kind of just have to go with it. So I'm fine on that front. But I do agree with the emailer as far as the Jax promo goes. It felt disjointed, disconnected, and not like with Jax as a character from an emotional perspective. I felt she was just disengaged from it all. So I'm with him on that.
I don't think it's disgusting for Nia to be talking about it. I think you just have to make a choice. Are we going to go with this or not? And if you're going to go with it, then go all the way. Accidents happen, and you know, sometimes happen more often with some wrestlers than others. But I just think once a decision was made that, you know, we're going to ride this, then I don't think you should hedge on it. And you know, if Becky's fine with it, especially in this case, I think, you know, because Becky's the one who took the punch to the face. I think if she was not fine with it, that would be a consideration. I think her being fine with it in this instance makes me, you know, more comfortable with it because she's the one who lost an opportunity because of it specifically.
Yeah, and I also think it's a mechanism to get Becky Lynch even more over than she already is. I mean, she's got this match out there that she can come back when she's healthy and ready, and have it with Nia Jax. And you can imagine the reaction that she's going to get up against Nia Jax and presumably in a victory over Nia Jax. So it's going to help Becky Lynch, even though in the immediate future here, it's not. But if she can come back healthy, she's got a ready-made money feud in the can ready to go at a moment's notice, which, you know, is valuable.
Yeah. All right, this comes from Philip from D.C. I am an Alexa Bliss fan, and I'm not opposed to Bliss overseeing the women's roster on Raw, but I had a couple issues with how it was executed. First, having Corbin say that she looks good and having that be one of the main reasons she got appointed is completely opposite of what the women's evolution message is, where the women have earned their opportunities because of their talent. Secondly, Michael Cole complained most of the show about Bliss being an active member of the Raw roster, so she shouldn't be put in a position of power, which makes no sense because Corbin has been constable or acting GM for months. And last I checked, he's been an active roster member for the entire time. That being said, I see Bliss moving into the role of GM full-time at some point and see it working reasonably well. I just fear that at some point Stephanie will, quote, pull a Stephanie and completely belittle Bliss, no pun intended. Your thoughts? Go VIP, everyone. You will not regret it. Thank you, Philip. PWTorchVIPinfo.com. If you want to find out what Philip says you won't regret, go VIP. PWTorchVIPinfo.com. Zach, yeah, the Cole saying she's an active member of the roster. It's like, Baron Corbin's wrestling your main event tonight. That was a little weird.
Yeah, it was so weird. It was so strange. And the first time I heard it, I was like, okay, I must be hearing things here. They couldn't possibly have said something like that. But then it came again and again. And it's just, it's one of those things where it's just like, it's not a big thing, but it's a important detail that I think people want to have the dots connected on. They want, you know, it's just, you have Baron Corbin, who's been essentially the general manager of Raw for months on end now, and in main event matches for most of those months. Like, he's an active member of the Raw roster and it hasn't been brought up one time. So I think they needed to connect the dots better for the audience in that regard, because it's a blatant oversight and inconsistency, which is, and an unnecessary one. Just don't say that. Like, it's really easy just to not say that part. And then as far as the segment with Baron Corbin kind of giving Bliss that job, yeah, that the line about them both looking good was really out of left field for me. And I noted that in my Raw report tonight. I was like, okay, I'm with you, Baron. I'm with you. Okay, Alexa, good. And then, like, wait a minute, what? You're both good looking? Okay, I guess. So, yeah, completely kind of disconnected from what the story was and out of left field, but I mean, it was what it was. It's kind of strange.
It was strange. I think Corbin saved himself by saying, "And I look good." You know, like, it's just, this is a job for good looking people. It's a weird thing. I didn't know that was part of the qualifications. But I mean, the saving grace is at least it was a heel saying it, and he said it not just about a woman, but about himself too. But yeah, I mean, I agree. It was weird. I think with Bliss and her concussion issues, that could be an ongoing issue. But she's such a talent on air, and has such a connection with fans, that finding something for her to do, even if she can't wrestle for a while, is a good thing. And I wouldn't be shocked if this doesn't lead to Bliss taking Corbin's spot and perhaps turning babyface or outsmarting him or something like that to become the sole GM.
Yeah, I'm with you. And, you know, on the show, you know, week in and week out, there are a handful of times the on-site correspondent has, you know, kids in the car, you know, younger kids, girls, boys. And, you know, a lot of them are, you know, mention Alexa Bliss as their, you know, one of their favorite wrestlers. And she just has that kind of likable personality that they don't avoid on social media. They don't avoid it on stuff outside of WWE programming. And I think at some point, you're not going to be able to hide that any longer. For as good as she can be as a heel, her natural charisma seems to fall in line with a baby face. And I think there's some money to be made for her there.
Let's go to Paul L. from Ridge, New York. I have to start with one question. Why are the Lucha House Party faces? I was a little too late watching Raw, so that was the first match I saw tonight. Corey and the Revival are right in this. It's an unfair advantage. I don't think Lindsay made a tag at the end, and he still got the pin. Could the Revival show up with a third guy and fight by the same rules? It makes no sense to me that Renee is trying to get the House Party over his faces when they're doing something that seems heelish. I just don't quite understand the rationale. I mean, they did address in commentary that Lucha House Party rules means no tags. You just get to enter when you want, but it's ludicrous. I mean, it makes no sense.
No, it really doesn't. And for me, it's just like, all right, they wanted some high flying, fast paced action on the show. So let's make this Lucha House Party rules match and let's just, you know, move on from there, have them do a bunch of flips, a bunch of, you know, cool off the top rope moves and call it a day. But yeah, like it really doesn't make sense. I tried to put some analysis behind that in the report tonight, but it's just like, there's not much else to say aside from the fact that it doesn't make logical sense. Period. End of story.
He also points out the, Baron Corbin is an active member of the main roster, so why is it a big deal for Alexa? But we already covered that. All right, Stephen C. says, so Bobby Roode gets his robe stolen. The announce team clearly tries to justify and get sympathy for Roode simply on the fact that the robe is worth $10,000. And there, we can finally put a theory on the quote, lost connection with fan base in today's modern thinking. In the 1980s, a bigger backing of characters such as, but not limited to, those robe wearers like a Ric Flair, the tactic would have been more than enough to work. However, in our modern era, and reality, Googled searched out personal and career-based mentalities, we all just sit back and ask ourselves, why would Bobby Roode be so stupid to have such an expensive item with him? Why would anyone spend $10,000 on a robe? Why am I supposed to care if he was stupid enough to bring it with him, with there being a chance to get it urinated on? Well, I will say in Bobby's defense, it's never crossed my mind when a wrestler brought a robe to the ring that the match would end with a robe being urinated on. So I do have to say that this is not something I would blame Roode for not foreseeing, because it's such a weird thing that we witnessed happen. My issue isn't the $10,000 robe. I mean, Ric Flair's bragged about that forever, and Roode is glorious, and fans have cheered him, and I think he's better as a heel, but, you know, this is part of his journey on the main roster, so be it. Again, my issue is just with babyfaces being so easily distracted by shiny objects, in this case, Bobby being distracted by his robe. I understand being concerned for the robe, but why is he always in these situations with Beer Money and James Storm? Right on the verge of victory, he and James Storm would start doing their Beer Money thing, and then the heels would recover and counter their sure victory. And it just made them look so dumb when they did that spot. And now you have Roode doing something similar. The biggest thing for Roode to do would have been like, I'll buy a new robe, I want these tag belts, and not get distracted, and then, you know, take care of Drake after the fact.
Yeah. This was the low point of the show for me. I really didn't like how the finish of the match went down. I thought they set it up relatively well, like I talked about earlier, with the caller, or with the onsite correspondent, excuse me. I liked the serious nature of their promo ahead of their entrance. I really thought that was on point. They kind of changed their tone. They said, hey, time for games are over, time for laughs are over.
Yep.
You know, we got our title shot here. Yeah, and yep. I was really, you know, I was encouraged. Like, all right, you know, yeah, they could do something with this. Like, you know, give them 10, you know, 15 minutes or something like that to really have a good match. And even if they lose, I think they could, you know, get over the hump. And then to have it go down the way it did, and he wasn't distracted for like a second and then got rolled up. I mean, he stared at the screen for a good, what, 30 seconds, maybe 40 seconds. Like it was too long of a time where it's just like, come on, you can't be this dumb where it's like that robe means more to you than the match that you've been pining for since you started your tag team. Right. Like it was a big disconnect, a big miss. And I did not like this moment of the show.
All right, Devin from Nashville, Tennessee. I'm excited at the process. This is for you, Zach. I'm excited at the prospect of seeing 205 live wrestlers on Raw and SmackDown, but I'm a little confused by the wrestlers selected to be on the main show so far. Why do Lucha House Party and Leo Rush get picked, but guys like Mustafa Ali, Buddy Murphy, and Cedric Alexander don't? Those three guys look like they could hang on the main roster and would put on one hell of a match with the right partner. Just curious if there's any apparent reasoning behind the choices. Thanks for the great content. Zach, you cover 205 Live every week for PWTorch.com. Are you surprised that Lucha House Party and Leo Rush are the ones who are kind of mainstays?
You know, honestly, not really, because 205 Live, you know, as much as it's kind of the maligned WWE brand, like there is talent on that show that WWE wants positioned as the top talent on that show. And those guys are Cedric Alexander, Buddy Murphy, Mustafa Ali. And I think, you know, we've all seen what happens to 205 Live guys when they come onto Monday Night Raw. And I think WWE, for better or worse, wants to protect the top talent on its 205 Live brand. So they don't want to have the Lucha or Mustafa Ali or Cedric Alexander in, you know, 5 minute Lucha House Party rules matches on Raw to fill some time. I mean, they mean too much to the 205 Live brand. Lucha House Party, they're, you know, kind of time fillers on 205 Live at this point. They're in opening matches. They're kind of in those filler show main events, but they're not featured talent on the show as guys who are carrying the brand week to week. So they can afford to have them be sacrificed on Raw more so than they can Ali and Alexander. So I think it's the right fit, honestly.
All right. Cesar Gonzalez from Los Angeles said, I'm convinced that the belief backstage is that Raw is a game of limbo, setting the bar lower and lower with every episode. Do scripted promos give us gems like Monolithic Mute, or is Ronda's awkward showing? I didn't mention that, although I did think of it when we're talking about Ronda's promo. The Monolithic Mute comment about Tamina was odd. Again, like I say, with Ronda, it's going to be an adventure. This did feel like an episode of Raw that, as Mitch said, wasn't meant, our on-site correspondent, it wasn't meant to be a blockbuster show. You know, you can't have blockbuster shows every week. It was more than a placeholder. It was, you know, trying to get heat on the heels. And, you know, forwarding some TLC hype, but it was an ordinary episode of Raw, rather pedestrian, without any, you know, big hot shots or turns or anything like that. But by definition, you have to have those once in a while. The key is to make sure that it's laying the foundation for something bigger later with a payoff.
Yeah. I thought this was a weak show, but if the payoff is good, then I'm fine with it. You know, I mean, they've got a decent amount of heat to work with Baron Corbin, Drew McIntyre, and Bobby Lashley going into next week and going into TLC. So if they've got a good payoff, then we're going to look back on shows like this and say, hey, okay, well, that set the table nicely for things that were to come on the horizon. And yeah, I mean, look, you look at any other, you know, TV show, whether it's, you know, whatever, Lost or what have you, whatever your favorite show is, and they're not all the, you know, exciting edge of your seat shows. There's shows in series like that set other things up, and I think this was that type of show for Raw.
Matthew from New Orleans echoes some of the other comments here. Baron Corbin put Alexa Bliss in charge of Raw. Okay, cool. I can get on board with that. I don't understand for the life of me why the announcers are denouncing this, because she's an active member of the roster. Don't they realize Baron Corbin's still an active member of Raw? Last time I checked, he was also the acting general manager. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Also, the Lucha House Party match rules are absolutely ridiculous, and even Graves pointed that out. It's 3-on-2, plain and simple, which is an insult to tag team wrestling. Besides that, in the first hour, we had not one but two promos from two top talents from two different doctor's offices. Those were two segments too many. I'm hate watching at this point, says Matthew. I mean, two doctor's offices. Yeah, it did feel weird. Like, you know, two instances of wrestlers in the first hour sitting in doctor's offices. It was just the wrong week to do a Dean Ambrose skit in a doctor's office with a whole vaccination bit, which didn't really make a lot of sense anyway. If you're going to have Braun, you know, in Birmingham with a shoulder surgery thing.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think it's one of those moments where, again, where it's an easy scenario and an easy problem to avoid. You know, you didn't need to have that type of Dean Ambrose promo in an doctor's office. Like, it barely made sense to begin with, and it didn't have to be there. And then opposite a Braun Strowman promo in the same place, in the same kind of environment, and then to put it in the same hour, it's just like, you know, someone just comb over that a little bit and smooth that out. Put it at, you know, opposite ends of the show or something. Like, I think there's ways around it, or just don't do it in a doctor's office. What did you think of the Ambrose promo, though? I felt that it was a little – that he was maybe teetering on the edge of, you know, Goofy Dean a little too much, and I don't want him to cross that line. I don't think he did, but I thought he was walking up to it and, you know, flirting with it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Dean, there's going to be a quirkiness to him. And there, I think there just always is going to be. I don't think we're going to see Dean be the menacing, edgy version of the menacing, edgy heel character that I thought he had the chance to be and was almost destined to be when the Shield first debuted. I think there's I'm not saying I'm voting for it. I'm just saying I think we have to resign ourselves to the idea that Dean and the writers are going to write him to be quirky. I thought he walked up to the line, didn't cross it in this instance, but I didn't like the segment. I thought that Dean was menacing. And but wasn't going for comedy. It just was not. I didn't think it was clever enough to justify the time that it had, and I just didn't really understand the whole, you know, inoculate myself because you're in Milwaukee, but I'm happy to go to Houston next week. It just wasn't. The hook didn't get
me. Yeah, right. Okay, I'm with you.
We got an email from Zach from Indiana on this topic. He said, Dean Ambrose talking about the stench of the city and catching diseases from the people is running the heel turn quickly for me. How can they go from him saying something as evil as Roman will answer to the man upstairs, essentially saying his cancer's karma, to talking down to the fans for cheap heat? The Roman thing was horrible and I don't like it at all, but going from that type of evil to y'all smell bad is weird and illogical to me. He also said, Michael Cole emphasizing that there is no way Strowman is ready for TLC is so heavy-handed it's frustrating. Is that all they can think to do with Braun, make him the freaking nature who even heals faster than the average human? So his character is now just a super strong, super fast running quick healer guy? Ugh. The Lucha House Party rules is stupid. The whole segment was beyond stupid. Nia Jax is now bragging about giving someone a brain injury. I'm so done with the show. If SmackDown isn't better tomorrow, I may need a break for a while. And he said, Michael Cole talking about Alexa Bliss being in charge while an active member is, or being like it's completely taboo moments after Finn Balor talked about his match with Baron Corbin, all caps, the general manager is an active member of the roster. He yelled that without, I think it's hard to tell. It's like six exclamation marks. I think, what in the world is going on tonight? He said, I hope, I'm so, so hopeful that I'm being unusually pessimistic tonight. You found the show to be great. Maybe you convinced me that I didn't waste my evening. Everyone who is VIP, stay VIP. If you're not, go VIP. Thank you, Zach from Indiana. He kind of underlined a lot of things we talked about already. I'm not sure if there's anything to add. Anything you want to add to that?
No. I think, I mean, you know, he's on point with a lot of it. I when I hear emails like that and I hear, like, some of the same things being brought up in multiple emails. It's just like the first thought that enters my mind is, did nobody catch this or is it just sheer laziness? You know, because enough people out there did. And it's just like, it's not hard to catch. And that's what boggles my mind with it. It's just, it's not hard to change course with it. So why not just do that? But hey, yeah. Maybe easier said than done. I don't know.
But Anthony says, Dean Ambrose's heel turn has been a major disappointment. I expected greatness from him. This is Tony from New Jersey. Damn, what's up with Ronda Rousey's eyes? I can't even look at my screen during this promo. Is she on drugs or something? Nia Jax is the best heel in wrestling, in my opinion. When will WWE learn that their fans hate heel authority figures for running amok? They just can't help themselves with this BS. Everyone knows Vince McMahon is backstage, and that's the only authority that anyone needs to know. Yeah, Ronda does weird things with makeup on her eyes, and she had weird yellow smut, like yellow streaks on like her right temple. And I don't know if we saw the left side of her face in that segment. I think she's just as much of an adventure as her choice of words and phrases are. I think her makeup is an adventure too, and she's trying to be distinctive, but I'm not sure what we're supposed to think about it, and it's a little quirky.
Yeah, it's definitely quirky, but I'll say for me, it doesn't bother me, because I think, you know, it gives a good representation of who she seems to be, you know, as a personality and as a character. Like, she's just a little, you know, rough around the edges. She's raw, and you know, you're just not sure what you're going to get or how she's going to come off. And I think that's part of what makes her good, what makes her fun to watch, and what's made her so entertaining and kind of pick this up faster than I think a lot of us thought that she would. So I'm fine with it. I don't, for her, the quirkiness works. I think it's just in line with who she is. And you hear guys talk all the time about, you know, be yourself with the volume turned up. I think this is her, whether it's the eye makeup or the way she's trying to talk, like that. She's a quirky personality. Like she is an oddball, and we're seeing that on display here, but with the volume turned up, and I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Dan in London says, I thought Raw was better than last week, but that's not saying a lot. Am I the only one noticing we've had Balor versus Corbin and Elias versus Lashley for about 10 weeks running now? It seems like forever in a bad way. Also, the way Corbin gave Alexa power to say, you look good, I look good, that's all that matters, makes no sense at all. So he thinks she looks good, so he gives her power? Who wrote that? No need for that at all. It only brings more confusion. So a lot of, I guess, like-minded reactions to a bit here. Some comments on Dolph and Seth from a couple emailers here. Ross said, Rollins and Ziggler again. Did the writers and bookers miss the last 15 matches they had on TV this year? Wasn't the whole initial point of the open challenge to bring us matches we may not see otherwise? It was during an open challenge when Kevin Owens debuted on the main show as NXT champion. Are they just afraid to shake things up a bit? By the way, I'm attending SmackDown in Jacksonville. I'd love to be your correspondent. Well, let's mark you down. We'll be in touch. I work like 6 to 36 hours ahead on these things, not weeks. So you'll hear from me, but it might be like January 7th. All right. another email along those lines, and we'll jump in with some reaction. Tony in New Jersey also said, Dolph Ziggler, really? He gets the IC title match? How lame. How unoriginal. How lazy. Let's not make someone on the roster or from NXT. Let's give Ziggler another IC title shot, because we've never seen that before. I like the idea of Lars Anderson coming in to be, you know, the unlikely babyface, but I could also see did I see Lars Anderson again?
You did. Oh, I was gonna let it go.
Oh, don't. I need to have like a zapper and people just push it when I get it wrong. Lars Sullivan. It could also end up being a IC title open challenge. You know, could answer that. I'm not for that because I don't think you would make him by having him lose to Seth, and I don't think it's time for Seth to lose to him, because I think you're shooting it to the top too quickly. So for people who kind of want that, I'm not for that. But I don't think Sammy's ready yet. I don't think Kevin Owens is ready yet. I mean, you know, who are you going to have be that surprise heel, I assume, who answers the challenge? Who, you know, I'm just kind of thinking the NXT top guys are going to be involved through, I think, probably NXT TakeOver in January. So I just don't know if that person is out there to be that pleasing surprise challenger at this point. Does anyone jump out to you, Zach, that you think would be a good fit? The timing works and you'd look forward to seeing answer the challenge.
Well, yeah, the first one that I thought of was Lars Sullivan to be that guy. But for the same reasons that you said, I was not fully on board with that move. And as far as the NXT guys go, I mean, any of those guys would have been exciting, whether it's, you know, whoever, Adam Cole or Aleister Black or, you know, whoever. I think they all would have came with an element of excitement here in the short term. But long term, you know, they are still on roads and still wrapping up stuff in NXT. And I don't know that you want to derail any of that and throw them to the wolves that is the WWE main roster in Seth Rollins. When they announced this match, I think it was, I don't know, yesterday afternoon or something, or I don't remember, earlier today, what have you. But I thought it was a moment that, okay, maybe they will actually take the Intercontinental Championship off Seth Rollins. Because if you listen to the commentary tonight, and even in last week, the commentary and the announce team are telling a story of like the lost architect or the broken architect, the guy who's kind of Seth's lost his way since Ambrose, you know, turned on him. And I thought with this open challenge, they might actually go ahead and pull the trigger on some NXT star coming up and beating Rollins, you know, in a heelish way with the help of Ambrose, just to further that story with Rollins and then to get, you know, a successful debut of an up and comer from NXT. But given there's a lot of balls in the air with that, and it's hard to catch all of them. So I'm kind of happy they strayed away from that. I know Dolph Ziggler is not like the sexy choice, but it, you know, we got a good match. That part of it worked for me. I'm, you know, I know it wasn't what everybody wanted, but you know, it works from a storyline perspective, I thought.
Well, I hope they have a good payoff, and I think there's some potential there if they've been dropping some hints or, you know, some breadcrumbs there. We'll see where that goes. Chewy from Pembroke Park, Florida says, so we all know that Seth isn't dropping his title before TLC, so why give us another Dolph-Seth match? And that because it fills 20 minutes of TV time? And then not only that, but have Seth actually win with a signature move? No one ever wins with signatures. He's done the superplex into a Falcon Arrow forever, and I can't recall him winning. So does this define Dolph down again? He's split from Drew. He's losing clean to non-finishers. And just when I started to like the character again, and he stopped yelling. Or is it not so much of a defining down as just a reminder that, hey, sometimes signatures work too. And maybe Sammy can even win with a Blue Thunder Bomb once in a while. Man, this is a slog of a show. But now that I have RSS Radio app, I can finally enjoy VIP podcasts. Thanks, Chewy. Appreciate it. Go VIP, everybody. I like when setup moves or you know, secondary finishers win. I think you got to do that once in a while. Ziggler's jobbed a lot, and I don't think losing to Seth, who's, you know, the top active babyface right now on the roster, is anything to be ashamed of in a competitive match. I mean, Ziggler is not going to be protected. He's going to be a guy who loses to top guys, and I think that's fine. You know, you have to do clean finishes sometimes. I mean, you can't have everybody peeing on robes. So,
oh my God, please don't give him any ideas.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I totally agree. I was caught off guard when Rollins got the three count after the superplex into the Falcon Arrow, and I was like, okay, wow, that was cool. Like, that worked. You know, it keeps you on your toes as a viewer and as a fan, not to just buy into the, you know, regular cadence of WWE matches, and this throws it for a loop. So, you know, I think it'll have a residual effect on Seth Rollins' matches moving forward. I think, you know, it's in the back of people's minds now that, hey, this match can wrap things up, so pay attention. So I'm totally on board with that, too.
Does Bobby Roode have to retire that robe? I mean, if he wears it to the ring, everyone's going to be like, smelling and seeing if it smells of a urinal.
Oh, my God. I suppose so. I suppose you will. It's strange to even have that conversation, but yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right. Kenny Williams of Mobile, Alabama is on your side. The Nia Jax promo is cringeworthy to me. I understand that they're trying to get heat on her, but she just came off as not genuine and awkward. What do you guys think? Well, we've established that. I'm getting outvoted badly here. Love all the shows PW Torch puts out. It's the best place to keep up on the pro wrestling product. Go VIP, everybody. By the way, thanks, everybody, for last week making us the number one show in the Apple Podcast sports listing among current events-based pro wrestling shows. We topped the charts last week, so I appreciate everybody's support. And hadn't looked at that in a little while, so it was cool to see that coming out of last week's newsworthy episode after Survivor Series. So thanks to everybody for that. By the way, I don't say this much, but I should. Hashtag WKPWP. Is a way to engage with other listeners of the show or us if you want to draw attention to something that we said on the show to agree with or disagree with or add to on Twitter. Just hashtag WKPWP to do that. That's kind of the official hashtag of this program. Yeah, I don't know if there's anything to add other than, you know, your Bears beat the Vikings, and now you can gloat about the listeners being on your side on this Nia Jax promo, which I might now need to go back and watch to see if I wasn't paying close enough attention to how cringeworthy this promo that I liked from Nia was.
Yeah, you know, it's just, you know, hey, we're allowed to have different opinions,
of course,
right?
Yes.
We certainly do.
It's subjective.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And you know, as far as the Bears go, like, look, you know, I'm trying not to get overly excited, but you know, they are 8-3. Everything's pointing in the right direction, and it's been a very, very long time since we've had a decent core Chicago. So, you know, no gloating, just you know, we'll wait for that last game of the year and put a bow on, you know, 2-0 against the Vikings, I guess.
Yes. All right, Zach, it was a blast talking to you. Tell people a little more about what you do with PW Torch and where they can find it.
Yeah. Thanks, Wade. Thanks for having me. Always love joining you on the show. You can catch two reports that I do weekly for PWTorch.com. The first is live during Monday Night Raw, my alternative perspective Raw report with the happenings of the show and then my analysis on segments as the show airs live. And then later in the week, you can check out my 205 Live report, same type of report, just going through the show. Here's what happened there. Here's what happened there. Matches. And then my analysis on those matches and then on the segments. And then also give my VIP show On the Canvas a listen. It's a show where on a weekly basis, I take a current event. Usually it's in the realm of WWE, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. But I break that event down from a artistic performance perspective. So talking about, you know, the flow of a promo, cadence of a promo, we'll walk through specific matches, whether it's, you know, NXT matches or main roster matches, but frame by frame through the match to dissect the story, dissect the psychology, and analyze that backwards and forwards. This past week, Rich Fan was a guest on my show, and we did a full breakdown of Charlotte versus Ronda Rousey from Survivor Series. And we went just over an hour on frame, literal frame by frame breakdown of that match, providing our analysis on it. Rich had the match playing live as we did it, and a really, really just fun show. Hope you guys check it out. It's On the Canvas. It drops every Friday, usually for VIP members. So go VIP and check it out.
PW Torch, VIPinfo.com is where you go to get more details on everything we offer with VIP membership. And you can check it out for under 10 bucks a month to start. And the rates are even lower if you commit to a 3-month or 1-year sub. So go check out details on our kind of storefront page, PWTorchVIPinfo.com. Zach, always a blast talking to you. Thanks so much.
Absolutely, Wade. Thanks very much as well.
You bet. If you want to be an on-site correspondent on a future episode of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, drop me a line at WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. Please put the name of the city in the subject line. It helps me stay organized if you do that. So that's WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. Follow me on Twitter at The Wade Keller. Follow our brand on Twitter at PWTorch. You can also follow us on Instagram at PWTorch and on Facebook at Facebook.com/PWTorch. You can friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/WadeKellerTorch. Check out pwpodcasts.com. That's pwpodcast.com for written recaps of pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts. These are written reviews, kind of like Rotten Tomatoes or, I don't know, Amazon reviews, I guess, of podcasts written out in long form and also just catching up on what you missed. Just in the last few days, there was a recap of my interview Friday with Kevin Eck, ex-WWE creative team member. Heated conversations with Booker T, with Raven, talking about Billy Corgan wanting to buy ECW back in the day, how far ECW could have gone, his thoughts on life. And also, Booker talks about CM Punk's claims of being a locker room leader. So if you don't have time to listen to that, go check out pwpodcast.com, read what they had to say, and maybe it'll whet your appetite to check out that show. Also, recap and review of the latest 83 weeks on Eric Bischoff's first year in WWE, making out with Stephanie McMahon, the star he never felt he had a connection with on screen, why the initial brand split didn't work, and the wedding of Billy and Chuck. Also, the Jim Ross report with Angelina Love on why her WWE release was a blessing, what brought her and Velvet Sky together, Billy Gunn helping her career, and her thoughts on Ronda Rousey. And the latest Steve Austin show with Kalisto on being inspired by Rey Mysterio Jr., how a guardrail saved his life, why he decided to quit wrestling, Lucha House Party, and designing his masks. So, oh, and way more. Edge and Christian with Shawn Michaels talking about the reason he wrestled at Crown Jewel, if he wants to have a match at WrestleMania, and the NXT wrestlers he finds easiest to give advice to. So just great stuff out there. Also reviews of Something to Wrestle With Bruce Pritchard, Jim Cornette, Sean Mooney, Chris Jericho, and more. It's a great site. And Andrew Socek and Jeff Rush are just doing a great job coordinating that site, editing it, and all our contributors are doing a great job too. If you're interested in becoming part of that website and helping us with our coverage of podcasts, if you listen to wrestling podcasts and you want to volunteer to help round out our coverage on that site, drop me a line at WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. And just put interested in volunteering for PW Podcasts. And also check out our sister site, MMATorch.com. So much going on in MMA, including the Tito Ortiz, Chuck Liddell, fight. Yes, they fought again last weekend. Full coverage of that over at MMAtorch.com, along with the latest on Anderson Silva's next fight. And they'll keep you up to date on what's going on with Brock Lesnar, John Jones, and all the big names and all the big fights and all the smaller fights, too. So check out MMAtorch.com. Mike Hisko doing a great job as managing editor of the site as of last month. Back on board, really amping up the content with new writers, new features, more news, more live coverage. Go check it out. That's MMAtorch.com. And of course, check out PWTorch.com for the latest pro wrestling happenings, reviews of all the TV shows, pay-per-views, my live coverage of Raw, SmackDown, and WWE pay-per-views, plus editorials, special features, flashbacks, breaking news, and more. That's PWTorch.com. That will do it for me for today. Thank you, everybody, for your support. And until tomorrow with Jason Solomon from Solid Monster Sounds Off, where we review SmackDown at WadeKellerPostShow.com, by the way, if you want to stream it live as right after SmackDown ends. Jason is with me tomorrow. And then Jason Powell is with me for the Thursday flagship over on our blue brand, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. Be sure you're subscribing to both this, the post show, the red logo, and the shows that we put up later in the week, two or three shows later in the week, on our blue logo, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, the flagship, our interview shows, and our mailbags. Just search Wade Keller wherever you listen to podcasts and click subscribe on the blue logo, and you are on board. And while you're at it, check out the PW Torch livecast lineup also. Just search PW Torch or Pro Wrestling Torch. It'll bring up our white logo with the Torch logo on it, and or the white, I guess the white podcast logo with the Torch logo on it. And subscribe. There's a new show every day. MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling fans. Shows dedicated to ROH, Impact Wrestling, NXT. Zach just talked about the deep dive with Rich Fan. Also, Wrestling Night in America with Greg Parks anchoring the lineup with his post-pay-per-view call-in shows and Sunday night shows previewing and reviewing major events in professional wrestling. Plus, my handpicked best of show every Friday. So go check it out. That's the PW Torch livecast lineup. Just search PW Torch or Pro Wrestling Torch to subscribe for free on your podcast app. That does it for me for today. Thanks, everybody, again. And until next time, Wade Keller signing off. Thank you for downloading the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Don't forget, you can get these shows with the ads and plugs and commercials all edited out on our special VIP audio feed with a VIP membership. That applies to all four shows that I host during the week, the Wade Keller Post Shows and podcasts later in the week. And also all seven PW Torch livecasts, plus all of our VIP exclusive shows throughout the month. There's about 100 of them. I host about 12 per week that are VIP exclusive. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, post pay-per-view roundtables, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, and the Fix with Todd Martin. We got a bunch of other great content. Check out full details at pwtorchvipinfo.com. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com. Yes, all the VIP podcasts, including the ad-free versions of this show, are compatible with popular podcast apps on both iPhone and Android. You can also stream the shows right from our ad-free VIP website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. So check out details if you want to support us and get these shows ad-free and a ton of other VIP-exclusive podcasts. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com for more details. We've got a mobile-friendly sign-up form. You can be VIP in about 2 minutes. Go for it. pwtorchvipinfo.com. If you shop at Amazon, I have a request. When you shop at Amazon, don't go to Amazon.com. That sounds weird. How are you going to shop at Amazon if you don't go there? Well, don't go directly there. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you go there, there's a giant Amazon logo. Click on it. It takes you right to the Amazon homepage where you were heading anyways. But that small detour tells Amazon, we sent you there. And when they get that message, they send us a commission on everything that you buy. So it's a great way to support us without having to do anything different other than when you shop at Amazon, start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for your support.